This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Snack the planet. It's time for Junk Food Cinema.
Hack the planet!
Hack the planet!
Hack the planet!
You know, God isn't up this late, but we are.
We are.
Because we are your weekly cult and exploitation film cast right here on filmschoolrejects.com. I am Brian, and he is...
Lieutenant Omega Force Cargill.
I was trying to think of a hack. We need hacker nicknames. Steak Plissken, I think I've got mine.
Steak Plissken.
I think that's pretty solid. Massive Burn. Massive Berm?
Massive Worm.
Massive Worm. Yeah, I like that. We're going to go with Massive Worm.
That's my 90s. You know, actually, if we went full 90s, I would actually be Space Cowboy.
You should
like, I'd have to do the film reference in there. I would be Space Cowboy.
We don't have enough leather pants to go full 90s.
This movie isn't full 90s, and that's kind of what's glorious about it, but we will get into
we
that
will, we
after
will.
Some business.
After some business, and that business includes reminding you that if you like the show, you can find our entire back catalog on... this thing called the internet. Don't be scared of it. I know it's new. I know it's uncharted territory.
It is a series of tubes.
It is towers. It is basically Mega City 1 from Judge Dredd, but in
Holy
digital form.
Shit, is it?
It really is. But you can navigate through all of those towers and find on Stitcher and on iTunes our entire back catalog. Feel free to indulge in that. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And if you really like the show,
if you really like us,
if you're a massive fan of the show, you can actually support us on Patreon, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. That's how we keep the lights on. That's how we keep our 156K RAM computers
where we
up and running.
Where we make episodes just for you.
Just for
our patrons.
Yes, we do. We actually not only had a bonus episode last week, I also added the newest taste test to that. Someone forced me to watch Rotor.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck that.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like RoboCop with an eighth of the budget filmed in Dallas.
Yes.
You're welcome.
As opposed to Houston,
where the actual RoboCop
was filmed.
Yeah, it's the first time I would choose Houston over Dallas. No, you know what? That's a shitty coin flip. No matter how you slice it. Anyway, this week we are in fact hacking the planet.
We're hacking the planet. It's about fucking time we got the hackers.
Hidden beneath the world we know is the world they inhabit. They're hackers.
Hackers penetrate and ravage private and publicly owned computer systems.
The planet!
It's not just something they do.
Sure, this sweet machine's not going to waste.
Are you challenging me?
It's who they are. They can crack any code. And get inside any system.
Hello?
Mr. Gill, according to our records, you're dead.
I'm what?
But this time...
Come here, look at this.
They just hacked the wrong guy.
Game's over.
Whoever wrote this needs somebody to take the fall.
He's about to commit the perfect computer crime.
You've created a virus that's gonna cause a worldwide disaster?
And they're about to take the blame.
Okay, let's nail it.
Now...
You're not good enough to beat me.
Yeah, maybe I'm not. But we are.
They're the only ones who can prevent a catastrophe.
Hackers of the world, unite.
United Artists welcomes you to the new world. Hackers.
This has been on the short list forever.
That short list is not short. I thought that last week when we did Empire Records that we were tapping into the most 90s movie of all time.
Oh no, we are tapping into two of the most 90s movies of all time.
And this definitely is one of them. I'm not even sure I need to tell you what Hackers is about because it's called fucking Hackers.
Yes.
But it does bear mentioning how we saw this movie this evening.
Well, yeah, this is one of those, like, once a year, you and I find a movie that is playing at the Draft House that we've been meaning to and talking about covering. And it's like, hey, it's fucking playing. Let's go see a movie, have a couple of drinks, and come back and do the episode. And sure enough, we saw this big on the fucking big screen.
Yes, yeah, we did. We saw it at the Alamo Draft House with plenty of booze. I mean, the way it was intended to be seen.
Yeah. I don't think they actually intended that, because there wasn't an Alamo Draft House back
was
when Ian Softly made this.
If they can project the future in this film as they do to include an internet that features just skyscrapers and city streets, it's like that weird narration at the beginning of Tron Legacy where Jeff Bridges is like, I tried to picture the internet as streets and motorcycles running through it. It's like, yeah, no. I know Jeff Bridges, because that's hackers. That's what hackers thinks the internet is.
Well, okay, so here's the essential thing that we need to begin with. There's a reason why there are many reasons why I've held this close to my heart for so long as a film. But the thing about this film in particular is that this film is very much like The Warriors. In fact, I consider it the spiritual sister film to The Warriors. The Warriors, well, follow me here, and this is essential. The Warriors is a movie in which there was a profound thing happening in the youth culture. It was a criminal thing happening in the youth culture, and someone said, let's make a movie about it. And they gave it to a director who had a very interesting visionary sense and tried to peer into the future and see what the future was going to look like. And they peered a few years into the future, and in The Warriors, they peered into the future and said, well, this is what's happening in disco culture. We think this is going to flow over into gang culture, and gang culture is going to be about originality. And what you end up with is this very lean, mean film that doesn't look anything like what actually happened. Like, that version of New York never came to pass. It is just a version of gang culture that is so silly and so off the mark that you can't help but fall in love with it. And that's what Hackers is. Hackers was Ian Softly instead of Walter Hill saying, this is what's going on in music culture. This is what's going on in teen culture. And this is where I think hacker culture is going to go. And he veered into this future that doesn't look anything like what fucking computers look like.
No.
Doesn't look at nobody ever dressed the way that they dress in this film.
Yeah.
Nobody talked the way they talk in this film. Like, everything about this movie misses the mark culturally.
Yeah.
Except that as a film, it hits everything it's going for in terms of storytelling. And so it is a film that you are deep into with these kids on their crazy fucking mission in their crazy fucking world, and you don't give a shit.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, honestly, of the way the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie presented runaway culture.
You mean with
orphan
tiny
culture?
Little Sam Rockwell hanging out at the indoor skateboarding park?
Because that's what orphans did. They went to giant indoor skate parks and stole cigarettes from...
And hung out with Sam Rockwell.
Because it was like that movie depicted orphan culture the way that like Oliver Twist did, where it was like Shredder was Fagin and he was just running this band of little pickpockets, right? And that complete misunderstanding of its own subject matter is at the heart of Hackers. And if Empire Records is a dated movie for the 90s, this fucking thing is carbon dated. Like... The fashion and the music and, like I said, just the gross misunderstanding of the internet. And what's crazy about that, and what the epic swing and a miss of this movie is something I find so charming, because this is not a lazy film. This is not made by people so out of touch that, like, they didn't care what they were putting on screen. These guys went out and studied hacker culture. All of the handles from all of the characters in this movie are based on real hackers.
Yeah.
The Gibson, which is like the big MacGuffin of the movie, is based upon the guy who coined the term cyberspace.
Yeah, William Gibson.
William Gibson.
The guy who created cyberpunk. A guy who famously walked out of Blade Runner 20 minutes in because it was too close to the epic opus he was working on, a film, a book called Neuromancer.
Do you think he did that with this movie too? Like, oh, this is too close to everything.
No, this was after he had like hit and done all of his big stuff. I mean, William Gibson's still around. He's a fucking genius. But yeah, no, William Gibson created so many of the terms that would then become used on the internet. He created internet. He created web.
Wait, Al Gore didn't invent that?
No, Al Gore did not invent the internet. He created web. He created the term hacker. He coined so many of these terms that didn't exist beforehand. And they actually go into one of, they actually drop a couple of those references in the movie where they'll refer to keyboard cowboys in a line that sounds really funny, unless you know that this guy is actually quoting William Gibson at this point.
And on top of that, the writer, the director, some of the cast, they went to New York City 2600, which was a monthly hangout for the local hacker community. They researched the shit out of it and still got it this wrong.
Well, again, this is what happens when you have all the right information and you think culture is going in one direction instead of the other. Because that's exactly what they did with gang culture in the Warriors.
Yeah.
They just were like, we think this individuality push is going to go into the 90s or into the 80s. And what happened in the 80s instead is we became more homogenized. We swung back because, you know, culture's on a pendulum and it goes back and forth. And we had gone so into individuality and we're so different that the 80s became about becoming the same. That first our parents, the yuppies, all became the same, and then that trickled down into us, the kids, all wanting to look exactly the same, which is how you got silly late 80s, early 90s fashion. And this is thinking, hey, we're going to go back into that again. We're going to hit this grunge thing that's going on. Like, keep in mind that grunge was just exploding when this happened, so much so that the, you know, director Ian Softley thought it would be really cool to have a Nirvana poster on the wall of Johnny Lee Miller.
And call at the beginning when Johnny Lee Miller is hacking says, this is
Eddie Vedder from accounting. Yeah,
so.
Because this is all just happening and nobody knew that grunge was going to become what it was. And they thought this was going to become more of a digital cyberpunk era. And so they made a cyberpunk movie and we never hit cyberpunk.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's fascinating about this film is just how widely they missed the mark in a movie that otherwise hits everything it's aiming for.
I feel like this movie is to the internet what something like Death Wish 2 is to punk culture. It's just like, you don't quite get it at all, but you tried so hard. They did so much research and they still got it this wrong to the point that the graphics, when they show what the quote unquote internet looks like, it makes the Lawnmower Man look like Avatar. It is fucking...
That is not true.
It's pretty true. It's pretty close. It's like an extended episode of Reboot. Like,
no. It's more like all of the intros and bumpers from Night Flight
Dude, that's what I said to you during the movie.
I know. That's why I was waiting for you to go there, and you didn't go there, so I took it.
We're 6 minutes into the episode. Could you wait till 20 before you steal my material?
No.
The thing is, it's not stealing, it's the internet.
It's not stealing when we've been drinking.
It's slash R. no, but the thing is, like, this is a movie that one of the things I love about it is that it is terrified. Like, some movies lack subtext, this movie's terrified of it. To the point that, like, you will see two characters, like, both of them are trying to hack the same code, and you're like, oh, they're having a duel. But before your brain in the split second can formulate that thought on its own, the movie's like, no, we got you, don't worry. And it cuts to like footage of two people sword fighting, footage of two gunfighters shooting at each other, and it's like, oh, thank you, this movie is edited by fucking Night Flight, because it's just a series of stock footage to fill in the gap so that you don't have to think.
Yes, but at the same time, that's fair. Because this movie is throwing a lot of information at an audience, information we didn't have. Like, if you go back and watch, there's a number of great YouTube videos from this era. Like, last week alone, we dropped a reference to the Microsoft video made by The Friends.
Yes.
If you go back and watch the Today Show episode, the famous Today Show episode where they're trying, same year.
What's that A symbol with the circle around it? What's that?
Yes.
Like, they didn't know what the at symbol was.
Nobody, because we didn't know, because this wasn't really in culture. We knew computers were a thing that you typed into, but things were happening so quickly, and the internet had just happened. Like, people don't realize there was no real access to the internet before 1994. And it wasn't until people discovered the Y2K virus that a number of companies were like, shit, we need to update our computers now and we need to get them in before this happens. And everybody wanted to redo their computers and get the more up-to-date computers. And all those computers came with modems that had access to the internet. And all of a sudden, an entire culture had something completely new happening, and nobody really knew how to explain it. You know, you had a bunch of us teenage nerds who had hung out on BBS systems for a long time and got the little in jokes about, you know, the baud rates, the beautiful baud, as they say.
Made of baud.
A reference that doesn't even make sense anymore.
Half the references in this movie don't make sense anymore.
I know. So they're trying to explain all of this to people, and they're asking the audience to digest a lot of information and to bring it back around. When you're asking the audience to digest a lot of stuff in movies like The Matrix, you got to be simple with everything else so that everyone else is following along while their brain is chewing on all the big ideas. And this is trying to explain why what these kids are doing is wrong, mm-hmm. and why what the people are doing in the companies are so wrong that the hackers ultimately they're doing wrong turns them into Robin Hood and turns them into the heroes of the film. And that's essential. And that in 1994 and 1995 is not easy to explain to my mom and dad. So this movie does a very good job of explaining people who have never heard of the internet what the fuck the internet is, while also showing all these glorious colors and doing a lot of symbolic representation. You know, the best thing is that the infamous garbage file from this movie is really just this crazy video of fucking formula just flying around in tech colors like you're fucking high and staring at a math book.
I was going to say, it looks like the lead in to some computer game you had to play in elementary school to learn what prime numbers are.
Yes. When you were in elementary school, because my elementary school didn't fucking have computers, young kid.
What was it like before the internet, Grandpa?
Let me tell you what it was like in the Stone Age when we only had pagers.
What's a pager?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So this movie is grasping at this and trying to explain computers to people and using this amazing imagery, but at the same time, like The Warriors, is telling this super fast-paced, bam, bam, bam story that you are just deep in. Like, the thing is hackers will never bore you. Like,
it is physically impossible for you to be bored by this movie.
Like, this movie... It is a film in which there's a lot to laugh at in what they get wrong, mm-hmm. but there's no missteps in the storytelling. Like, the storytelling is always on point. You're always amused. You fall in love with all of these characters. All of them are well-written enough that you are just deeply into them, well-acted enough that you fall in love with them. Like, yeah. I mean, let me just drop this right now. Who's the coolest fucking hacker in this movie?
Matthew Lillard.
Serial killer?
Yeah.
Incorrect. The correct answer is Lord Nikon. Lord Nikon is the single coolest hacker in this fucking movie.
See, and that's
my wife has just walked into the room and shaking her head because she thinks Phantom Freak is the coolest hacker in the
who's
movie.
And
he's a close second.
Who's your favorite hacker could be a game you play watching hackers? And that actually does speak, that is a testament to how well they put this band of misfits together.
And you're going to have one asshole in the group that's like, Joey.
Fuck
Joey. Joey's the coolest hacker.
Fuck Joey.
Joey saves the day.
Yeah.
Joey's the one closest to the colonel when they're hacking the Gibson.
He's also the person that put them in a position where they had to do that in the first place.
Well, yeah, so. Because Joey's a putz. But Joey's a putz who becomes elite. Like, his story in terms of the movie, like, he's the one who has the real arc.
Elite. I can't tell if you're intentionally making reference to the movie or if it's infected you to the point that that's just now part of your lexicon.
Both.
Okay.
Both, because that's the thing is, you know, we start out with our character who we're supposed to be following his arc, but really, Crash Override, a.k.a. Zero Cool.
A.k.a. Johnny Lee Miller holding his British accent back like a wolf at the door.
By the way, Johnny Lee Miller in the movie that introduced him to the woman that would become his wife for a few years.
For 4 years,
Angelina Jolie.
They were married, to their credit, longer than this movie was relevant.
This movie's always relevant. Fuck off. This is fucking Hackers we're talking about. You just saw it on the big fucking screen.
And
this is goddamn Hackers. But no, Johnny Lee Miller, he starts out fucking elite. And then he doesn't have access to a computer for 7 years.
What a weird sentence. I'm just saying, like, that. How do you police that?
You know what? That was a thing that happened. There were a number of hackers in the 80s that pulled off big notorious hacks. He was based on one of them. And what they would be on probation. So what would happen is you'd have probation officers randomly stop at your house to check to see if you had a touchtone phone or had a computer. And you couldn't, that was the thing, is they limited your computer access. Like, that's something that seems stupid now. Although there have been a couple of cases in various places where people have been denied access to smartphones or computers. But yeah, that is, so he's denied access to a computer or a touchtone phone for 7 years. He's about to turn 18. This is the one point I feel they make a misstep in the film. You laugh.
Sorry.
Look,
what's the one misstep this movie makes? Love this movie, but come on, that they make.
In terms of storytelling.
Oh, okay, sure.
In terms of storytelling, because yeah, we can do an entire hour long podcast making fun of everything this movie got wrong about computers and the internet in the future, but this movie, in terms of storytelling, there is one misstep, and that misstep is we see Johnny Lee Miller on the computer. We know he's still a high school student. But he's not a young high school student. And then his mom says, happy birthday. So you assume
it's his 18th birthday.
It's his 18th birthday. For his 18th birthday, he has gotten a computer and he gets to play around with a computer for the first time. So he hops on to fucking hack something because he's fucking zero cool.
Because Scorpion codes and whatnot.
Later in the film, his mother mentions that he's still underage. And if his parent and if he's fucking around, he's going to get in a lot of trouble. And then, of course, they do show up and he does have a computer and they don't really care.
Yeah.
So whether or not Crash Override / Zero Cool is under the age of 18 is never actually properly established.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing where I think they make a misstep because there's no reason to make that comment about him being underage. In terms of the way this movie's made, I feel like that was like an editing, a continuity error or a reshoot that like came together. Like they maybe reshot that bit at the beginning to explain where did he get the computer? I don't know. But so that's the one part that it's like, all right, this part doesn't jibe. Like, is he 18 or not? We don't know. But he is a high school student and he is an elite hacker.
Yeah.
And so he ends up getting falling in with this group of other hackers, because if there's one thing computer nerds do, it's dress cool. If there's two things computer nerds do, it's dress cool and go to parties.
Yeah.
Because that is internet culture. Again, one of the glorious things about this movie is it envisions internet hackers as being cutting edge cool kids, as opposed to people who sit home. And this is where this movie's truth meets its fiction is there's that scene where serial killer is pulling out all the books from his bag, one of which would never fit in his backpack, the ugly red book that doesn't fit on the shelf, just magically pulls it from under the table.
It's a backpack of requirement.
Yes, it's a backpack of requirement. He starts dropping shit on the table and they start mentioning it like, yes, these are all the books we read. And for a moment, we understand how Zero Cool still knows how to hack. Because they said he couldn't have a computer. They didn't say he couldn't get the books. Mm-hmm. Where he found out which books he should be reading is up in the air. But
fuck it. In the inner library.
In the inner library. Yeah, they did say he was never allowed to own a computer. He could have looked it up on a computer at a library actually existed in 1995, which it pretty much did.
Wait. Libraries didn't exist in 1995?
Computers and libraries didn't. There was nothing really to do on the internet that you could do at a library. It wasn't like now where an 85-year-old man can go into the library and watch porn. Like, it's not like, I know what I need to do. I need to go to RedTube while I'm in a public space because that's what I need to do.
Yeah.
So there may have been some libraries. So we can assume maybe he went to a library or his school had a computer lab that allowed him to do this stuff. But he knows all these books. Real computer nerds in the 90s sat at home on a Friday night drinking Jolt Cola. That was the part they got
all
right.
All the sugar and twice the caffeine.
Yes. Yes. All the sugar, twice the caffeine.
We're going to say that like it's a good thing.
That was
the
selling
point.
Enjoy
the heart attack before you're 30.
Dude, when I was fucking 12 years old, Jolt Cola was the thing that I was mainlining. Like, if that is a surprise to any of you, you have not listened to this podcast long enough.
I tried to find on the way from the theater to your house a store that carried Jolt Cola.
Planet K.
God damn it.
Planet K. All the Planet K's in town. That's where I had to start getting it when I turned 17, and that's how I discovered head shops. Was a friend said, you got to go to Planet K. They keep it stocked and chilled. And I went into Planet K, and I'm like, what's that smell?
Which, by the way,
and my friend is like, that's patchouli, yeah. And that is not the only thing you're smelling. And that is where I discovered all of these weird hacker books. It's where I picked up my copy of the Anarchist Cookbook. They carried Mao's Little Red Book. It's where I was first introduced to the works of Timothy Leary. Planet K, for those of you that don't live in Austin, is our chain of head shops. And they carried, especially in the 90s, all the Alterna stuff.
Yeah, like, and you can also play Wipeout on PlayStation at Planet K, I'm pretty sure.
No, could not. They didn't have video games. They made their own colors.
Right.
You could always get Jolt Cola. So when I was 17, 18, and 19, that's where I would go to pick up Jolt Cola in the bottle because they did not carry the cans. I had to have bottle Jolt before it finally vanished from stores and I could no longer get Jolt Cola. And from what I hear, you can still get it at Planet K. I'm not entirely sure I believe it.
But on the plus side, you have stopped shaking finally, so that's a good thing.
But I can't vibrate through walls anymore.
Yeah, but I will say that something you said about that store, Planet K, sounds like a slogan for Junk Food Cinema, which is, it's stacked and chilled.
Have you never been into a Planet K since you've been here?
No, I don't smoke weed, so of course
I've
never been to a
Planet K. You don't have to smoke weed to go to Planet K. It's just good
if
you smoke weed. It helps.
But it helps.
It really helps. But yeah, it's... It's the head shop also. It's the head shop that also carried all the literature and all the oddball stuff. It was kind of like what happens when an alternative bookstore meets a head shop meets a what was it called? The place in the mall that every kid
Hot
went
Topic.
To. No, the place
Spencer's Gifts.
Spencer's Gifts. It was
like, what are the two worst places imaginable in a mall?
Yes, and it was like a Spencer's Gifts because that's where you also got all the dirty. Birthday cards.
Yeah,
that was
Spencer's
the...
Gifts can go fuck itself. Can go straight fuck itself.
Are you upset about all the Trumpkin stuff?
No, I just fucking hate that store and have for
you
a
do
long
know they
time.
Sell Trumpkin stuff now.
Oh,
right?
that's just icing on the shit cake that is
that is Spencer's Gifts.
Yeah,
but you know what? That's
this
where
episode
we...
brought to you not by Spencer's Gifts.
That's where we all got our black lights and our strobes and our plasma balls
Great.
In the 90s.
Great, that's the place where you bought the lights that showed you just how much you masturbated as a teenager. Black lights, revealing things you don't want revealed. Since
you never
you
turn it on
Spencer's.
When your parents are in the room, and you also don't come on your walls. Like, that is, like, what were you doing in the 90s?
I was playing a game
that
called...
That black light scared you.
I was playing a game called Spider-Man.
Hackers! Hackers! Back to hackers!
Snack the planet!
Snack the planet!
Two hashtags for this show, Snack the Planet and Stargrove. I want to make two disclaimers before we go any further, because I will be poking a lot of fun at this movie, but...
As well you should.
But I want to bring up a quote... from the Plague himself, alias Eugene, alias Fisher Stevens.
Fisher Stevens, who gets
Fisher
third
Stevens.
Billing in this movie.
Yeah.
Above Matthew Lillard. This is how early in the 90s it is. Matthew Lillard is playing fourth fiddle to Fisher Stevens.
So many fiddles.
The guy who was best known at that time as, he's from the Short Circuit movies.
He's offensive brown face from the Short Circuit movies.
Are you nuts? Come at me!
But I want to quote him in a way that sums up why it is okay for us to laugh at this movie and still love it. The credo of junk food cinema in the first place. He has a line where he says, "There is no right and wrong. There is only fun and boring." This movie doesn't it thinks it's doing everything right. It's getting everything wrong, but it doesn't matter because the one thing it's not is boring.
Ever.
This movie is so much goddamn fun. And the other disclaimer I want to make, sort of in the same realm, there is so much casual rollerblading in this movie. So much casual. And by
casual.
By that I mean people are just
they never make it, they never like, hey, look, we're rollerblading. It's like, how are we getting from point A to point B? Well, we're going to class. We must be rollerblading. Hey, we're going to this club in the middle of New York City. We must be rollerblading.
They're just flying around with smiles on their faces like they're not goddamn rollerblading. Like, there's a scene in this movie where the homeless are rollerblading.
Yes. Yes.
This is like a Donald G. Jackson film. There's so much fucking rollerblading.
Okay, so this is a moment we need to step in.
That's a reference, nerds.
We need to talk about the director here.
Let's do this,
because Ian Softly is someone who... Ian Softly is a person who, if you just looked at his 90s work, you'd be like, oh, he's a fantastic director. The minute you cross Y2K... Well, because, you know, when you're talking about his early career, he did Backbeat, which is a great little film about the Beatles before they became big. That's a fantastic movie. Hackers, and then Wings of the Dove, which was the example used by people of the classic Oscar bait movie of the 90s. Like, if you're making Oscar bait in the 90s, you were making Wings of the Dove. But then you get to 2001 and you get K-Pax.
Oh, no!
2005, you get The Skeleton Key.
Ooh, you know what?
The Skeleton 2008, Key. You get Inkheart.
And we're done. I was almost going to defend Skeleton Key until you said the next thing that came out of your mouth.
Oh, Skeleton Key is not defensible.
No, it's not.
It's not.
Not after Inkheart, it's not. No.
Yeah.
I could, but I won't because Inkheart.
Yeah,
a sentence that I
because
like
Inkheart is
lot.
A sentence that shouldn't come out. So, like, his 90s work is so good, and this is, like, straight in the middle, and I absolutely love his 90s work. Like, I think it's all really solid, and I think this is his most visionary piece. I think if there's a piece that he's remembered for, it should be Hackers, because say what you will about how goofy he makes the internet look.
And we will.
He makes the internet look pretty fucking cool.
It's a rare case of, yes, you're incorrect. You are wholly inaccurate about the actual logistics of the internet.
Yes.
But you kind of make it cooler than it is.
Yeah, because really, what the internet really was at this point and what it is even today to a certain extent is Joey, the coffee-swilling, chain-smoking jackass who can't figure out his own handle. By the way, handle is our 90s word for the name you chose for your Twitter account.
Yeah.
He can't figure out what that is, but it's the 90s, and they're not all taken yet, so things like Dr. Doom are still totally within grasp. Like, this is not the point where you had to add numbers to anything or your birth year.
I was just going to say, this is not the era of you go to play Xbox and Fucker Nut 69
yeah.
is just mowing.
No, like, I remember when I got on the BBS system, before the internet was public, there was a popular BBS system called the World War IV Network, WWIV. And it was a series of computers that would call each other every day or every few hours and swap information. And that information would be electronic mail and gaming information for these weird turn-based games that we would play. And email at this point was measured in hops, the number of computers it took to get to the person you were talking to.
Wow.
And on the World War IV network, I was able to get the handle, the Stainless Steel Rat, which there's like 12 of you out there that are going, oh, yeah, Cargill, you're deep into nerddom. Because back in the 70s and 80s, there was this great sci-fi series of books, which is essentially James Bond in space, called the Stainless Steel Rat series, written by Harry Harrison, which was available in every science fiction collection that you found where you buy one book and you get seven books for a penny.
Like, I love that you think there are people who have listened to this show for upwards of 2 years now who don't know you're a hardcore nerd. like those 12 people are like, oh, it finally clicked for me.
People wander into the show every once in a while and they're like, who the fuck is this Cargill guy? Yeah, he was a guy. I was Harry Harrison. So a stainless steel rat was, it was the, oh, hey, look, I'm using this obscure reference as my internet thing because it was the 90s and we thought that was cool.
You were swinging your nerd dick around.
I was swinging my nerd dick around and would occasionally,
you're so cool.
Occasionally on the BBS systems have people go, oh, you're a Harry Harrison fan. It's like, yes, we are bros. Except bro didn't exist at that term. We didn't use that word. No, in the BBS is what we would do is, hey, let's recreate the script from Monty Python and the Holy Grail from memory because you couldn't go online and find the script from Monty Python and the Holy Grail at the point. Like, this is how stupid this internet was that this movie is trying to make a movie about.
Right.
But yeah, you could still get names like Dr. Doom or Master of Disaster, like he's like Joey's playing around with.
Yeah.
But no, most hackers right now are Joey. Like it's you're just someone who can't dress, who smokes too much, who drinks too much coffee, and is just obsessed with looking cool.
By the way, the more you talk about young Cargill, the more I understand what zero cool really means.
Oh, so. Zero cool. That is actually the truest part of this fucking movie is that hackers and computer nerds in the 80s and 90s, we were not cool people. We were people who took,
oh, come now.
We were people who took our computer to the same place and hooked it up every Sunday afternoon and then copied each other's discs so we could get more games because it was the only way to get games in the 80s. And we could not wait for Computer Club because Computer Club is where we got all our new cracked video games. Cracked by hackers.
Stop it. Oh my God.
Yeah, no, this was not a cool time, which is what's kind of amazing. The reason I talk about this is because hackers, even at the time, was so antithetical to what computers were at the time. Like, it was not a cool place to hang out. Knowing how to use a computer was not something that chicks would dig. It is not something like that's actually one of the most interesting things about the movie. In fact, another one of those grains of truth of this movie is the reason why Johnny Lee Miller falls in love, you know, Crash Override, falls in love with Acid Burn, Angelina Jolie.
Oh,
is it just that she's 19-year-old Angelina Jolie, whose only credit before this was starring in a movie called Cyborg 2?
Yes, that is very, very, very inescapably true.
And unwatchable.
Yeah.
Thoroughly unwatchable. Like, you will be tempted at some point, I want to watch Angelina Jolie in Cyborg 2 because Cyborg is a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie and Hackers is awesome, and this falls in the middle of that. You will suffer, my friend. Cyborg 2 is not a thing that should ever, like, consider me your cinematic Jesus. I have died on the cross for you and watched Cyborg 2. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Do not watch Cyborg 2.
No delusions of grandeur on this podcast.
As far as anyone is concerned, no messianic complex at all.
Not at all.
As far as anyone is concerned, Hackers is where Angelina Jolie showed up into the pop culture, and that's where we're going to leave it. But the reason why, the reason why he falls in love with her is not because she's young and gorgeous and has those big bee stung lips. It's because she's elite and she's a challenge to him. And this is what's so great about this is classic 90s feminism. This is, by the way, this girl, the object of attraction, as you know, we're going to throw into this movie because it's still the 90s. He's not in love with her because she's hot. He's in love with her because, holy shit, she's fucking awesome.
She is an elite.
She is elite. And she may be better than him.
Yeah.
And she bests him at the beginning of the film. And he tries the rest of the film to best her and never actually does. In the final admission of the film, it's like, I can't believe the guys said you beat me. And he's like, they didn't. They just knew this was the only way I was going to get a date. Like,
yeah.
Even then, he never bests her. And that's what's hot about her to both him and to the audience. Like, she is more brains than beauty, but she brings fucking 19-year-old Angelina Jolie to the fucking table.
She is www.hominahominahomina.sexe. / fic. It is ridiculous how gorgeous she is in this movie, despite the fact that she at one point is making out with a dude and they both have the same haircut.
Yeah, and that's
really confusing.
But that's one of the cool things about this is that the what he has to her is a brain. Like, that's what's cool about this relationship in this movie is they're both attracted to each other's brains. Like, they're both like
they
it's still fucking
fuck each other's brains.
It's still fucking young Johnny Lee Miller and young Angelina Jolie. So, you know, in terms of movie audiences, we're like, these are the two most attractive people in the movie. They must gravitate towards one another. Still, what's getting them is they are challenged and they want somebody who gets them. And that's what this whole attraction is. Like, there's that thing where, you know, she's making out with her boyfriend on her boyfriend's motorcycle. And Johnny Lee Miller asks about it and says, who's that? And they're like, it's Calvin or whatever his name is. And it's like, well, what does he do? And that's where Phantom Freak is like, you're looking at it. He just looks slick all day. Like, she's dating this hollow fucking, you know, motorcycle outfit. Like, that's just it. And that's why she is drawn to our to who is essentially our protagonist, even though our protagonist doesn't have much of an arc. Like, seriously, the only person who has a real arc in this movie is fucking Joey.
Yeah.
Joey has the arc. Joey starts off as the nerd who wants to be recognized, and by the end of the movie is the guy who helps crack into the Gibson and ultimately steals the garbage file, which he ultimately discovered to begin with.
Yeah.
It's like Joey should be the star of this movie, but it's like, but then we don't understand what's going on with the two good-looking hackers. Yeah. We should focus on them and let Joey kind of just show up a lot.
Yeah.
And to as 90s as this is, there's a Ryder Strong joke in this movie.
Like, yeah, he calls him Boy Meets World.
He calls Joey Boy Meets World, which he looks a lot like Ryder Strong at the time. And it's one of those things where if you've ever watched Boy Meets World, oh, wow.
Which I imagine is 90% of the people who listen to this podcast have probably seen at least
probably know what having a crush on Topanga means.
Oh, my God. Want to bang a Topanga.
Yeah, I had a feeling. We've never actually talked about this, but I had a feeling you were one of those guys who grew up wanting to marry Topanga. Like, she was on your list of three girls that if I get married when I grew up, I'm going to marry Topanga.
Yeah, this is very true. But I also want to caution you that if you watch Cyborg 2 and you think it's the worst thing you've ever seen,
it's not.
Keep in mind there are two other movies in that franchise alone.
It's still
One is called.
No, there are not.
Yes,
there are not. There are not. Do this to people.
I have to do this because
you
the third
do know
one,
that Hannibal Montana is going to watch all three of these Cyborg sequels.
That is his cross.
And
to bear.
Cyborg is the best of them, which is like saying getting punched in the crotch three times is the best of what some guy in a fight would do to you.
Especially when you consider the fact that the only reason Cyborg exists was because they failed to get the Masters of the Universe sequel off the ground.
But that already built the sets.
But it had already built the sets, and
they're like, fuck it, I've got this script called Cyborg. Let's give it to your favorite director, Albert Pune.
So keep that in mind when I tell you that the third film in the Cyborg franchise is Cyborg 3, The Recycler. Think about that based on what we just said about the first Cyborg.
Oh my God.
Yes, the serpent is eating its own tail. Stargrove. This movie, my favorite part of this movie is when the hackers are engaged in this competition to see how much they can fuck with this Secret Service agent.
Richard Gill.
To just ruin his life. And they are just going back and forth with like this prank war on him that is so epically awesome. And
it really is. And it's very much, this is again, this is the elegance of the storytelling in this film. This is why I admire this film in terms of storytelling so much and why I will defend it. Here we have the classic competition. And the competition is, you know, we're watching two characters kind of measure dicks, if you will, except not in this movie, because this movie is actually quite fucking feminist.
Mm-hmm. It's also quite what's the opposite of homophobic? It's
I guess
it's
what you call it in this day. This movie, like, this is one
inclusive.
Of those movies.
It's a very inclusive movie.
What some people would call woke today.
Woke
is the
I don't
word.
Know what that
yeah,
means,
no, it's
we'll
got
go
a
ahead.
It's got a very multicultural cast. It is very diverse, and it is not afraid to make the woman as good, if not possibly better, than the protagonist.
What I found so on that note, what I found very interesting about this movie is that one of the characters, Freak, is actually
Phantom Freak.
Phantom Freak is played by a character or an actor named Rinaldi Santiago, who most of you probably know from the movie Con Air. As
I love how you leaned, you say that you leaned over to me during the movie and goes, "Oh, now I know how he ended up on the plane."
He gets arrested in this movie, and I'm like, "Oh, that's how he's on that plane." But his character in this movie... We never see him released. His character in this movie is so much more progressive and, quote, woke than the gay character he plays in Con Air, which another podcast referred to as the most racist movie since Birth of a Nation, which I can't argue with if you really think about that
movie. Wow. You know what? I don't think they're wrong, but
that's what's crazy. Like, it's such an insane thing is
not
to say.
Yeah, there's a reason we have not done a Con Air episode. Like, Con Air is a movie I love, but
because,
not a Con Air.
Hey, because Greg wasn't available.
Because Greg wasn't
That's
available.
Why we haven't done Con Air yet.
You know what? By the way, let's just throw this out there for longtime listeners.
Yeah.
Many of you online have seen that there is this crazy thing that happened here in Austin for this event called Caged.
Oh, man.
Or Caged 4, depending on whether you use the 4 as the A or not. Where Nicolas Cage came to a Nicolas Cage film festival and watched four of the movies and read some...
He read The Telltale Heart.
He read The Telltale Heart and did a 45-minute Q&A. Greg is the guy who organized that. Greg is the guy who's been doing the Caged Film Festival every year. Caged, Caged 2 Uncaged.
Caged
3D. Caged 3D, and then Caged.
Forever.
Caged Forever. He's the one that organized that. He talked to us about that before we did his episode when we did Streets of Fire last month. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those, or actually it's technically February when we're recording this, like a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, it would be really cool if we could get Nicolas Cage. But I don't think we're going to be able to do it.
He was going to pull it off this time.
And he pulled it off. So for those of you that saw that online, if you're fresh to us, if you have not been listening to the podcast very long,
fresh
if you've just discovered us and you're like, wait, what? Check out our Streets of Fire episode when we sit down and talk with Greg McLennan, the guy who fucking scored Nicolas Cage at a Nicolas Cage film festival here in Austin.
And neither one of us were there because we're going nowhere slowly.
We're going nowhere slowly. Well, it was one of those things where when I looked at it, I was like, you know, this is the thing about these Nicolas Cage film festivals. They're not going to show me a movie I haven't seen already because... Yeah. I acknowledge the genius of Nicolas Cage, and regardless of whether it's a good movie or a bad movie, in fact, every movie they showed, I've seen.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true, but I will say this. Bringing it back to a little movie called Hackers.
Hackers?
Matthew Lillard in this movie reminds me so much of Nicolas Cage.
Matthew Lillard is a very interesting actor.
Because he's doing that thing that I feel like so many people look at an actor like Nicolas Cage and say, oh, he's terrible. I don't care if you think he's great or you think he's the worst. The thing you can never say about Nicolas Cage is that he is boring.
He's never boring.
He does not...
He never disappears into a film.
He always makes the most interesting choice imaginable to a performer.
And that's what Matthew Lillard did.
Because, again, there is no right or wrong. There is only fun and boring.
Yes.
And Nicolas Cage is fun, as is Matthew Lillard in this movie.
Sadly, Matthew Lillard ended up falling into a rut that he was tied to another actor.
Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Who was essentially his best friend. Like, you know, he's openly talked about how every time he had to prank Freddie Prinze Jr. every time he was on set because they were such good friends. And his favorite was the time he went in and pulled an Upper Decker when they were making a movie. God, he went and put it in his trailer. He pulled an Upper Decker in his trailer. And like, this is the kind of friends they were, that this is what you would do to each other. Like, this is something you and I wouldn't do to each other
because it's borderline sex crimes. That's why we wouldn't do it.
Yes, but Matthew Lillard did. But there was a point before he was doing Freddie Prinze Jr. movies when he was just doing really interesting, crazy stuff. And this is arguably his best role. Serial killer is his most interesting, most likable role. Just a hair in my book below Shaggy. Because like the thing is, really you talk about the Scooby-Doo movies, he's the only one that gets them.
No, I would agree with that 100%. What I find really funny about him playing a character named Serial Killer in this is the movie most people know him from is the one where he plays an actual serial killer.
Yes, Scream. Yeah. Where he's not as interesting as he is here.
Hit me with the phone, Dick! Like, yeah, it doesn't work in that movie because nobody in that movie, including the Jamie Kennedy experiment himself, is as over the top and crazy as he is.
No, no, they aren't.
And you can sniff out that crazy a mile away.
And he's here. And the thing is what's so great about this is Serial Killer is so over the top and so pathetic and so weird, and he's still fucking cooler than Joey. Like, he's still cooler than Joey.
I feel like that's going to be the baseline for everything we do from now on. Cooler or not as cool as Joey?
Well, that's the thing is, you know, Joey thinks he's cool because he's guzzling coffee and smoking cigarettes and hacking, but nobody fucking respects him because his mother actually probably does dress him.
Hey, I'm going to hack all your files. Oh,
get no respect.
Yeah, you're going to hear us saying that in future episodes. Yeah. Like, yeah, but at least he's cooler than Joey.
Serial Killer, still not as cool as Lord Nikon. Lord Nikon.
Which is my favorite camera. All of them.
Yeah, but no, that's actually what it's drawn from. Like, when we finally see the Lord Nikon
because
image.
They all have their own logos. Because if there's one thing you want to do as a hacker, it's branding.
It's individuality. Well, I mean, hacking, you know, that is actually one of the things that they get right to the environment, although they go over the top with it. Like, hey, we have our own screensavers with our names on it. Like, no, not everyone is that narcissistic
and
hacking.
That's what's so fucking fascinating in the swing and a miss department of this movie is because if you think about what hacking really is now, what is the number one hacking group in the world called?
Anonymous. Yeah.
This team of people is the exact opposite of Anonymous because they want their names out there. They want to become internet famous.
Well, because so many people got arrested over the years that Anonymous is all about being, like, not being able to be caught. And even then, as members of Anonymous, in certain iterations, because, by the way, Anonymous has multiple iterations that go from, like, 18 months to about 2.5 years where they completely flip membership. When one of the members of Anonymous got caught, a whole mess of them fled to Canada to go through a what they referred to, and I'm not shitting you, an underground railroad of fellow hackers and pro hacking and Anonymous members to get them to non-extradition countries. That was a thing that happened because a bunch of this particular iteration is not my favorite iteration of Anonymous. They're kind of the ones that called a bunch of people out for rape crimes, and one of the ones they got right was right and the rest were not because they weren't as good as they thought they were. This particular iteration that I'm talking about were the ones that broke open Ohio, Steubenville, Ohio. They were the ones that released that information, if you remember that case, which you probably should. But a bunch of those guys ended up fleeing up north and then going into an underground railroad. But yeah, they were all Anonymous because before them, there were people who were like, look at me, I'm Lord Nikon. And the FBI shows up and like, yeah, you're going to jail, Lord Nikon. Like, I feel like all of these characters eventually end up doing time for their bullshit. But not in this movie, they don't, because a spontaneous, this is the 90s, and a spontaneous TV reveal without evidence will always solve any problems.
Can you imagine? Like, this is the like, we've talked about Empire Records in terms of these two movies are super 90s, super dated, but the real double feature for this movie, in my opinion, is Pump Up the Volume.
By the way. Or you said Pump Up the Volume, you mean Hackers.
No. I'm the double feature for Hackers, in my opinion, is Pump Up the Volume.
Although Serial Killer is essentially very much like the pizza guy from Empire Records.
That's true.
Like, it's right down to the fact that he's selling these cassette tapes, his mixtapes at the beginning. That's one of the reasons I've merged these two films together for so long, is because of Matthew Lillard and that rather unknown actor who played the terrible stoner.
I believe his name was Extra Sugar.
Extra Sugar?
Yeah.
That they're both passing these mixtapes of music on to people while they're also taking part in the plot.
Yeah.
But like, it's very much like you feel like Serial Killer's looking at them going, yeah, I know digital is the future, but vinyl is the way to listen to music. Like, you're waiting for that one line to come out of Matthew Lillard's mouth. But yes, so Pump Up the Volume.
So can you imagine in our current political climate, if all that was required to completely overthrow a tyrant was just somebody going on TV and being like, here's a paltry amount of evidence and I'm outing them. And then literally the government would just be like, well, we're dismissing.
Oh my God, Donald Trump, you're no longer president
anymore.
Can
you imagine that kind of of accountability. Can you fucking imagine?
To be fair, they do produce the number, and they're like, "Is this the account number in the Bahamas?"
We don't know. Arrest him anyway. Like it's crazy to me. Like, and you think about that in so many movies. So many movies where somebody goes on TV and goes, "Actually, guys, here's a photograph that proves that XYZ," and then that is the end of the bad guy. Everybody accepts that. Everybody, the moral compass faces north again, the scales are balanced, and that person is ousted.
And everybody's let out of jail because even though they committed crimes, they didn't commit crimes.
What has happened to us? I wish... Why do I have to wish we were still living in the hackers verse? Yeah. Why do I have to pine for the glory days of wine and roses and cyber bits? Like, what is going on?
Okay, so I need to take a tangent here, and this is an important tangent.
Dig into the potatoes for a second.
Into the potatoes for a second, because Hackers is a movie that I live with almost every day. Like, it is one of those, like, we talk about movies that are very much a part of us and very much a part of the why we love cinema. Hackers is very much a thing that comes up in my mind almost every day because the music from this movie is on heavy, heavy rotation in my home and in my phone.
What now?
So Simon Boswell did the music for this movie.
I thought Prodigy did the music.
No. Prodigy was this is part of how Prodigy became Prodigy. And at the time they weren't even Prodigy, they were the Prodigy. But no, Simon Boswell was the composer for this film and was the music supervisor. And he was the composer/music supervisor on a number of future Junk Food Cinema episodes. Let me just read this list, because I had to actually put it down on a list because I knew I could not keep it all straight.
I wish I had the top 10 list from David Letterman's show right now.
This is pretty close to that. Phenomena, a.k.a. Creepers. Demons 2.
Oh, wow.
Two Richard Stanley movies, Hardware and Dust Devil.
Damn.
Crying Game, Lord of Illusions, and most recently did the ABCs of Death.
Wow.
He is a guy who's done tons of great junk food. He did a couple mainstream stuff, but you know, this is his stuff. In addition to that, he was a producer and arranger for bands like the Sex Pistols, Blur, Echo and the Bunnymen.
Stop.
You know, nobody cool.
Stop. You have to, you're closing your
Orbital,
eyes when you say that.
I mean, like, this guy was deep into music culture.
The smug levels in this room just went up to
Look, just because I just became Jack Black from fucking...
You probably never heard of these bands.
Yeah. Jack Black from...
Final Sound So Much Better.
God, why am I blanking on the name of the movie?
High Fidelity.
High Fidelity. Yeah. Yes, I'm Jack Black from High Fidelity all of a sudden.
I wish you were more like Jack Black from The Jackal so that I could shoot your arm off.
No, but like this guy has been on the very verge of cool forever. And in this movie, he put the Prodigy on this, in three different points on this fucking movie, two songs, one of them, One Love, which is a remix of One Love, and then Voodoo People. This really kind of brought them into the forefront of the mainstream, and their very next album after this was Fat of the Land, which is the album that you guys know Prodigy from. They dropped the at that point and became Prodigy, and you know them for Smack My Bitch Up and Breathe and Firestarter. And this is the stuff off there, the Prodigy experience, that really kind of sizzled through the UK, but not the US. And so this is a big introduction to a lot of electronic music, just as electronic music is taking over and getting the baton from industrial, which is what, you know, 1989 to 94 really was kind of at the forefront. And so this is where electronic music really starts kind of hitting us. And this soundtrack is so fucking good. Like, just everything about this soundtrack just pops, and it's great. So much so that when we saw it, they actually made a pre-show of just music videos of all the songs that are in this movie, because they all had music videos and they're all fucking great. This music drives this movie, and it's very much like The Warriors in that way, where you are just very much carried along by this kind of pop culture wave of what is going on in the undercurrent, by what is never going to go on in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
And so Simon Boswell did just such a great job with this movie. And it's like every scene that you're flying through these digital towers, that literally these terrible, like, not only that, we mentioned the digital towers, they have the digital towers in the computer room, which, by the way, another actor we have not mentioned yet, the security, computer security guy, Penn Jillette.
Penn Jillette, playing a character named Hal, which furthers my theory that this is the 2001 of internet movies.
Dude, this movie, that Hal is not an accident.
No, of course not.
Like, this movie is all about making every computer nerdy reference in 94, which,
fucking,
by the way,
Phantom Freak is something we talked about in our sneakers episode, the phone freaking, which,
yes,
not, like, a disproportionate amount of this movie, the hacking is just them getting free long-distance phone calls.
Which is what hacking originally started out as. Like, it was just before there were computers, there were phones, and people figured out how to get phone calls for free, and they would freak out the computer systems, the very archaic computer systems, that were controlling the phone systems.
And you would do that at headquarters, and it would please Master Shredder.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. What were we talking about?
Hackers.
Hackers. Is there anything else we need to tap into? Like the fact that they steal the Superman 3 plot before Office Space did? The fact that, yeah.
The worm?
The worm that siphons off fractions of a cent from the oil company.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that Lorraine Bracco
you know what?
Was somehow in this movie.
There was one small point. Yeah, look, first of all, Fisher Stevens and Lorraine Bracco as the villains of this movie are both chewing up the scenery in a way that you have not seen them before. Like,
they're going to be shitting scenery for weeks.
They are both amazing actors who are doing some of their worst jobs here.
Not only that, but they have, speaking of zero cool, zero chemistry with one another, despite the fact that they're supposed to be fucking in this movie.
Although Fisher Stevens looks really awesome on that skateboard being dragged behind that limo. That shot is kind of fucking awesome.
Marty McFly can do it. Fisher Stevens, I'm not sure. Especially since it looks like what would happen if somebody was Marty McFly-ing off the back of Patrick Bateman's limo in that scene.
Here's the one thing they did kind of get right about corporate culture, though.
The skateboarding?
No. The fact that the companies, that corporations know so little about computers that they'll let just about anybody run their IT department, and Mr. The Plague, as they keep referring to him, even in board meetings, Mr. The Plague, is in charge of IT, but they're not calling it IT. He is the head of computer security. He's the IT department. And so when you put that in mind... Fisher Stevens is just kind of a crazy, narcissistic, like, hyper-stylized IT guy working with Penn Jillette.
I'm just imagining James Bond.
Who calls himself Hal.
I'm just imagining James Bond having to go up against an IT guy.
That's what this movie is.
That's what this movie is.
It really, really is.
Oh, wait. No, I saw that movie. It was called Quantum of Solace.
Oh, where they're trying to steal the water and double the price of it?
Acid burn on that movie. Oh, my God. Hackers is a fucking delight.
It is wonderful. Like, the thing is, like, it really is one of those movies. If you've not watched it in a long time, sit down and watch it. You will never for a moment go, why am I watching this? You're going to be eating it up with a fucking spoon going, this is so stupid and so cool at the same time. I want to live in this universe. I want to be brought in as elite. I want to be excited about the amount of baud that her laptop has. Like, the connection speed of her modem. Baud, back in the day, for those of you that don't, baud was the rate at which your computer could exchange information with another. So the first modem we ever got was a 300 baud, which, you know, would work on early IBMs and Commodores. And then we got 1200 baud, And eventually, when I was around in the early 90s, you know, the basic, like the high ends were the 14.4s, and then we doubled to 28.8s, and then we got 54K, and the 54.6 modems, holy shit, that's how you flew on the internet in 1995 and 1996. You had a 56K, and you were just soaring. And this was before we had high-speed internet. This is still dial-up. But yeah, the baud they mention in there is so subpar. By this day, in this day and age, that laptop that they're oohing and aahing on and staring at the screensaver that they're like, ooh, that baud would take probably 30 minutes to download a song if you didn't have any kind of interruptions on the server end. So you're looking at about 15 to 30 minutes to download a song on her laptop. That's how high tech this laptop is.
So these computers you talk about from your youth, were they steam powered, or did you just have to start them up with flint and stone?
You'd start up the coal with flint and stone,
okay,
and then they would be steam powered from that point on.
Man, you might as well just jerk off to oil paintings at that point.
No, at that point, jerking off on the internet was not possible because you would download an image of a girl and it would start from the top. And so you'd start from her hair and go to her eyes and then down to her face and then down to her chest. And if you were lucky, it would stop, you know, when it stuttered and you had downloading issues, it would stop at about her stomach. So at least you'd have something more than a face to stare at. You were literally like, there's old memes that go back about trying to download porn and being stuck. You would never download a video. Like the idea of downloading a porn video in the 90s is unheard of. You were looking at images and you were waiting for those images to load, and they did not load quickly. See, it's not like you kids today where you click and look at an image. It was, oh, hey, by the way, you're going to be waiting about 20 to 30 seconds for this girl to load
before you unleash yours. But interestingly, interestingly, the only person who was able to masturbate to internet porn in the 90s was Sting. I don't know why, but it was the ultimate edging experience.
Well, that's because he didn't come for 12 hours, so he was willing to wait.
Cutting edge.
Wow, that's even a dated fucking joke. Like, our jokes are
dated. As the computer technology in Hackers.
This is the end, my friend.
We've arrived at the junk food pairing.
Pairing.
It was difficult, not because I couldn't think of anything, but because the options were bountiful.
Obvious.
No. There were so many instances in this movie of people drinking soda, of people eating junk food, of product placement and a half. There's literally
a scene
where they sit a can of Coke on Lorraine Bracco's shoulder and then turn it toward the camera as if to go,
Yeah, because there was a bunch of. That's what's weird is there's a bunch of Coke references in the first half of the film,
yeah,
and there's a couple Pepsi references in the second half.
People are there's a whole there's a contentious point about French fries. There's a point where the place
which
is
are McDonald's French fries, yes, pointed towards us. By the way,
yes, there's a point when someone is eating a Nestle Crunch bar, Red Vines,
and is offered to the CEO of the company.
So there were so many options to choose from, but obviously, as we sowed the seeds earlier in this episode,
it better be.
It's Jolt Cola.
Jolt Cola!
Jolt Cola, the official soda of the hacker movement, which has, as we said before, twice the sugar and
all of the caffeine.
It's all the sugar.
All the sugar and twice
the caffeine.
And it really didn't matter. Like, it was literally just like drinking sugar.
Yeah. It's download
this
drink.
And then being wired and vibrating through a wall.
Yes. Download this drink to your system and watch your heart explode.
In order to drink Jolt Cola properly, it must be watched with Night Flight. Like,
yes.
You're drinking that without ending your day watching Night Flight is just doing the 80s wrong.
I feel like we don't need abstinence only sex education programs if we just bring Jolt Cola back. That's all we really need. And not only that, but thank God the FDA stepped in and said, this is dangerous, and we never had something like that happen again. Oh, wait, 4 Loko existed. Shit.
4 Loko is not... By
Loco
the way,
is the evolution.
By the way, Brian 4 Loko hands.
Yeah, no,
the guy who once decided to do a duel with another friend named Brian where you tape two 4 Lokos, old school 4 Lokos, by the way, to your hands and could not stop until you finished.
Yeah.
And by the way, you both made out with your metal RoboCop poster.
In my defense,
There is no defense to Brian the Four Loco Hands.
Hold on. I'll think of one.
There is no. No, what you did, that is the single most ridiculous thing you've ever done. And also the time when Brian tossing was the worst.
Hold on. I'll think of
something. The annual tradition at New Year's where I had to turn you on your side so you could vomit onto the floor so you didn't choke on it.
You know, I made a
this was the time
of all the Brians that have asphyxiated on their own vomit, man.
See, those of you out there think we're exaggerating.
No, this
is a real thing that happened.
It hasn't happened for several years, but it was a trend for a while.
There was a point during your 20s when New Year's Eve was not a time that you were friends with Brian and did not turn him on his side.
It was not a time for moderation. There was a time. I don't know how we got on this topic, but Stargrove,
because you brought up Four Loko, which you never should ever do again, because we're going to tell this story every time you bring up Four Loko on any episodes.
Oh, God. So
Brian Four Loko hands. You take two full tallies of Four Loko to your fucking hands, you moron. Jesus. Yeah. How are you still here today?
I don't know. I don't remember a lot of
you. That is
that
so
night.
Stupid. Nick Robinson would give you a high five.
Man, can we get any more inside baseball? Probably not.
At Nick Rob on Twitter. If you're not following at Nick Rob, you are not one of the true Hollywood hipsters.
Thanks for listening to Junk Food Cinema. Before we go, I realize I haven't done this, but I made a promise to do so. So I wanted to throw out a special thank you to Michael Buck, who was our latest $10 pledge on Patreon.
Oh, hey, Mike, thank you.
Thank you so much. You have no idea with the things that are coming up in my life how much I appreciate your support.
Oh, my God, you keep Brian's lights on, and Brian's got a bun in the oven, so you're keeping the oven on, too.
Keeping the oven on. That's weird.
It's a weird thought, but it's not wrong.
It's weird to talk about in succession Four Loko hands, and then Brian's gonna have a
and Brian
baby.
Being a father. Yes, if there's anyone in the world that doesn't feel a slight bit of discomfort about this, he's kind of sitting over on this fucking couch on this fucking podcast.
Anyway,
thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. If you want to listen to more of me completely reevaluate my entire life, iTunes and Stitcher, the Junk Food Cinema back catalog. You can also find us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema, like the podcast, Facebook.com/Junk Food Cinema, and of course, becoming a patron, Patreon.com/Junk Food Cinema. Cargo, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at MassaWyrm on Twitter.com. That's MassaWyrm. Or on Facebook, Facebook.com/MassaWyrm.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury. My Facebook page is Facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. Or you can also find me at No More Loco, which is my help group for people who addicted to the original Four Loko. That's not a real thing. But before we go, I just want to remind you that in all things, in all walks of life, no matter what you're up against, remember to always
hack the planet!